Welcome back to the Iowa Blog. I am your host, Craig Wynn. In the previous session on this particular topic, which is an insightful return to creation, to understand some of the hidden, previously unexplored aspects of Yahweh's presentation of the 6 days of creation, has brought us to this point where we're continuing now to analyze what he said about the fourth day, since it is so insightful. By way of review, we began in Bereshith, which is Genesis 1:1. We talked about the order of things on the first day and what God said that he did to speak the universe into creation. And in so doing, we compared what his testimony revealed versus what we have subsequently learned in science to demonstrate that everything is consistent with the best of our present knowledge, including things like God was the one that actually originated the thought of the Big Bang. He uses it in his testimony. He speaks of light evolving into organized matter. He speaks of the universe initially being chaotic. And he actually provides a testimony that when we recognize that it's being told from the place of creation, that we recognize that we have to view it from the perspective of Einstein's concept of and theory of relativity, where time does not flow at the same rate for all observers, and in the presence of great energy and great light, time would have been slowed to 10 to the 12th power, which is what we learned from the microwave radiation energy that is still emanating out from that Big Bang. And when we take 14 billion years and we divide them by the relative difference in the way that time flowed at creation versus a clock here on Earth, 14 billion years divided by 10 to the 12th power is 6 24-hour days. So Yahweh's testimony is precisely accurate, and there were so many unique insights that he provided along the way. And this brought us to the fourth day and to the last statement that I read at the end of part one of this two-part series. And it begins, "Therefore, let them exist for a time." The things that he is referring to are the two luminaries. These, in fact, he actually expresses this as sources of illumination and as luminaries. It is from La Maor. Ma is an interrogative in Hebrew. It means to ponder the implications of something, and or is the Hebrew word for light. So these maor are luminaries that we are being encouraged to question, to ponder their meaning and their purpose, even their identity. So therefore, let them exist for a time. Wahaya, let them be for a finite period. This isn't the call perfect. Now, this is different than what we read previously, where haya was defined by the imperfect conjugation, which means that these two luminaries were going to have an ongoing effect that would play out over time, where now it says that they're constrained in time by the perfect conjugation. And what that means is that there will be a period of time where these two luminaries serve to help those who are interested in knowing God and enjoying a covenant relationship with him and participating in his moed mikre as they were intended. There's a period of time where they're going to be accessible to us, and they're going to actually fulfill their role. In the case of Dode David, he's the greater of the two luminaries. He wrote about all of this and what he was going to do to fulfill the first three Moed Mikre. And then God wrote about how he would return on Kippurim to fulfill the sixth and then be king of the seventh, which is Sukkah, camping out with God. And the lesser luminary is responsible for cultivating the harvest associated with Shabuah, which is the promise of seven, and Teruah, actually even then serving in the role of the red heifer on the concluding portion of Teruah on a Shabbat, September 24th in 2033, not very long from now. And so their role, as it relates to helping us understand and appreciate the covenant, the mikre, what all of this means as it relates to being part of God's family, is only for a limited period of time. And the influence on those who benefit from what they have revealed and what they have done will then be eternal. That's why one was scribed in the perfect conjugation and the other in the imperfect. So therefore, let them exist for a time as sources of illumination and as luminaries in the expanse of space-time. This is Baraka. What this means is that you're supposed to view these two luminaries, the greater and the lesser luminary, as they actually define time. And this is now time from the moment that Adam and Chawa were expelled from Gan Eden, the Garden of Great Joy, for failing to trust and rely upon Yahweh's instructions, where their preference was to do as the religious have done for millennia, which is to corrupt God's testimony. So they were expelled from the garden for doing so. They severed their relationship with Yahweh as a result of doing so. That moment happens to be year zero Yah. It transpired 3968 BCE. And that is the beginning of this expanse of space-time. The second milestone, if you will, along the way, is when Yahweh reached out to Abraham and Sarah out of Damascus, out of Babel, as they had left Babylon, and were moving north. Yahweh reached out to them and invited them to participate in his covenant. And it was the affirmation of this covenant when Abraham and Yitzhak went to Mount Moriah, to confirm their understanding of the covenant. That was in 1968 BCE. And you'll notice that those two dates are separated by exactly 2,000 years. The reason for that is that they're based on Yobel years. A Yobel is 7 times 7 plus 1. It's based exactly on the same principle as the annual celebration of Shavuot, which is 7 sevens from Bukurim, or 7 sevens plus 1 from Matzah. And the Yobel years represent times where all debts are forgiven, all slaves are freed, and the land and the land returns to Yahweh, and the people return to the land, which is exactly what Yahweh is offering. He wants our guilt to all be forgiven. He wants us to return home to him. These are exceedingly important aspects of his nature, and that the creator God of the universe is a liberator. He wants his people to not be controlled by either political or religious notions. He hates it when religions like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and the most virulent religion today, which is the religion of progressives, seek to control people. He wants everyone to be liberated so that you're in a position to know who he is, understand what he is offering, and expects in return. So the second step along the way was 40 Yobel, or 2,000 years, from our expulsion from the garden. The 40 number is Yahweh's ongoing and continual reference to a period of time where we're evaluated or tested, if you will. And, you know, you'll notice that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights during the flood, that Moshe was on Mount Choreb receiving the Torah over 40 days and 40 nights. 40 is this period of testing. There were two consecutive periods of 40 years that the Israelites were enslaved inside of Mitzrayim, the crucibles of human oppression. And they walked in the wilderness, separated from the enslavement that they had endured and liberated by Yahweh, but yet not brought to the promised land because of their irascible religious propensity for 40 years. So 40 is this period of time, if you will, of evaluation and testing. The Obel is the single most important calibrator of epochs of time. 40 times 50 is 2,000 years. 3968 to 1968 BCE is exactly 40 Obel, or 2,000 years. The next event along the way, so that we understand this expanse of time, is when Dod fulfilled the first three Moed Mikre. You see, when Abraham and Yishak went to Mount Chorab to confirm the Bereth covenant with Yahweh, they performed a dress rehearsal for Pesach, which would be fulfilled in exactly that same place, on that same mountain, on the same day, 40 Obel later, by the very Son of God, Dod David, who was brought back in a second life to fulfill Pesach, where his body served as the lamb, and where his soul then fulfilled matzah, carrying our guilt into Sheol and depositing it there, never to be seen again. Where then the next day on Bukkudim, the firstborn son of God, as Yahweh refers to him, was then released from Sheol and returned home in Shamaim to his father. These are the events of the 80th Yobel year, or two sets of 50 Yobel from the time we were expelled from the garden. The first set was exactly the year and the date that Abraham and Yishak fulfilled this dress rehearsal for Pesach and affirmed the covenant. 40 years, 40 Yobel thereafter, Dod enables all of the benefits of the covenant by fulfilling the first three Moed Mikre. Dod is actually the individual, David, is the individual that was counterfeited by Christianity to create that religion. So this is what happened in 33 CE, which was year 4000 Yah. If you then go forward another 40 Yobel from year 33 CE, you end up at 2033. 2033 is year 6000 Yah. This is when Dod will be returning as the Messiah and the King, not just of Yisrael this time, but of the universe, along with his father Yahweh. And for that to occur, there is a special sacrifice of what's called the red heifer. It's an Adama Para, which is a bloody red man of the earth. He's the man from Edom that is going to allow a Hasatan, as a final act of desperation, to take his life, just as the beast of Rome took the physical life, the body of Dod, exactly 2,000 years prior to this event. So these are the markings, if you will, of time. 6,000 years transpire from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden to the time that we will return, because after Dod and Yahweh return, the earth is returned to the conditions that were experienced during Eden, so that we can camp out with Yahweh beginning on Sukkah for 1,000 years, celebrating life as God intended it in the garden as a result of what he's going to do to rid the world of religion and politics and conspiracy and all manner of deception and lies, so that we can live together and camp out in perfect harmony. This is the expression of time that is referred to by this expanse of space and time, Barakya. And it says, of the heavens, and of the heavens, Shamaim is important because it is from Shamaim that Dod was anointed not only with oil at Yahweh's request three times, signifying his three different lives, but also the spirit of Yahweh, the Ruach Kodesh, the maternal aspect of Yahweh's nature came upon him at that time and would never leave. So this is literally out of heaven. And then it was out of Shamaim that Dod would return, both as a body, a Bashar, and as his nephesh, the carrier of his personality, his soul, in 33 CE to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. And then it is out of heaven that he will return again in year 6000, Yah 2033, to fulfill Kippurim and to be king of Sukkah. It is also indicative of his herald, since his herald has the seven spirits of Yahweh enabling him, protecting him, making him bold, helping him to understand the testimony of Yahweh that has been there for the world to see for the past 3,480 years, but no one has previously perceived the message that we're sharing with you now. It goes on to say, so therefore, let them exist, these two luminaries, for a time as sources of illumination in the expanse of space and time of the heavens to provide light and illumination. Or, this is how you can walk into the light. We are providing you enlightenment, which enables you to be literally reflect the light that is Yahweh's to give. And this is essential because the whole concept of being part of the covenant family is that once we are adopted by Yahweh, perfected as a result of Dod taking our guilt and depositing it in Sheol, and become immortal as a result of what Dod did on Pesach, and then capitalize on this upcoming harvest of Shavuah, which is less than 2 years away, the 22nd of May, a Shabbat in 2026, which will commence the time of Jacob's troubles, a seven-year period that concludes then in 2033 when Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah will be fulfilled. But it is this transformation to light where we leave the physical world and all of the burdens and the decay of the physical world, and we are empowered and enriched by Yahweh, becoming essentially like him and becoming light energy. So this is the purpose of this, and it says upon the earth and the land. So our time is constrained on the earth and on the land in terms of the benefit of the children of Israel, the earth for all humankind. Our time on the earth is time constrained, while our benefit is like light itself, where time is eternal. This then continues, and therefore it would exist like this thereafter, based upon what preceded it. Yahweh has been very clear about these two luminaries, saying that they would exist as a manifestation of his very will, and that their existence would help us all come to better understand the role that the Moed, these restoring witnesses to the eternal testimonies that are played out over the seven Mikre, invitations to meet with God each year, Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah, that they exist to help not only explain the Moed Mikre, but also to fulfill them. Because these two luminaries, the greater luminary and the lesser luminary, are the only two humans that were asked to actually play a role in fulfilling the Moed Mikre. See, these essential steps for us to walk from the polluted world of man into the perfect world of God, which is the seven steps of the Moed Mikre, beginning with the doorway of Pesach, ending with camping out with God at Sukkah, that these events were fulfilled by Yahweh the same way he has tried to do everything, which is through his creation. He wants to work with us. That's why he worked with Dod to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. He is working with me as the Choder of Yashaya 11, as the Bashar, or the herald of Dod, our king, to fulfill the Shavuah harvest and the Teruah harvest, as well as the Teruah sacrifice, such that the homecoming on Kippurim is a great celebration of life for forevermore with Yahweh. So my job is to encourage as many people as possible to go to yadayah.com, read the books on the shelf, come to know who Yahweh is, what he's offering, what he's expecting in return, all of which is shared there, and the role that our King, our Messiah, our Savior, Dod played in enabling these events to transpire. And then come Teruah, my job is the same on the first half of Teruah, the evening of Teruah, and that I'm trying to encourage as many people to become part of the covenant family so that at the beginning of Teruah, they can be gathered unto Yahweh and transformed from mortal to immortal, from physical beings to light. But there's a second day to Teruah. The day actually begins at sunset on the 23rd of September, 2033, a Friday evening, the beginning of the Shabbat. The following day, heralded by a full solar eclipse, then is the time that the sacrifice of the bloody red man of the earth takes place to prepare the remnant of Yisrael that is still mortal and yet still filthy in their religiosity and in their politics, that have just this moment come to appreciate the value of Yahweh's name and are finally willing to listen because they've watched this spectacle take place on the Temple Mount where the adversary, the corporeal manifestation of Satan, has bludgeoned my body. And then Yahweh, with Eliah acting as the master of ceremonies, not only ignites the flames beneath my body, but also unleashes torrents of water from underneath the Temple Mount, and the ashes and the flames and the smoke and the cleansing waters pour over the Temple Mount and throughout Jerusalem, which has a dual effect. It cleanses the mortal remnant of Yisrael so that they're prepared to see, and not only to see Yahweh and be seen in his presence, but to welcome their Messiah home and to enter this millennial Shabbat as now perfected mortals. And so this is the positive side of it. On the negative side is that everyone who has come against Yahweh, including HaSatan, that will have bludgeoned me at this point, willingly, I'm going to set down all of the protection that Yahweh has afforded me all of these years, where I've had thousands and thousands of death threats and have never had to duck once. Because I'm protected by Yahweh's Malach, and I'm empowered by his seven spirits. So at this moment, I'm going to let all of my guard down so that I can fulfill that portion of Teruah, knowing the benefit that it's going to have. And one of the benefits is that it is the sacrifice of the red heifer in Numbers 19 that makes the cleansing and the preparation of the adulterous woman and Numbers 5 possible, so that Dod, as the returning king, can take a prepared and cleansed Yisrael as his bride. So there's only two humans who, in the role of sacrificial animals, were offered by Yahweh to fulfill the Moed Mikre, and that is why there's a greater and lesser luminary. Now, that does not put me in league with Dod. Dod is the king. I salute him. I work for him. He's the boss. And he is infinitely more important and powerful than anyone else. I am simply his herald. Just like the sun is so much larger and more powerful than the moon, and all the moon does really is reflect the sun's light. That's the role between the two of us. But nonetheless, these two luminaries, the greater and the lesser one that Yahweh was talking about, perform in these ways. And so he said, therefore, it would exist like this thereafter, based upon what preceded it. Bereshith 1:15. God engaged to appoint for this particular task both of these substantial and empowering sources of illumination, with the greater and most capable luminary becoming prominent and clearly known through his governance and proverbs as the influence over the daylight hours, and the lesser, the more recent and more easily understood luminary becoming known and prominent as the influence over the night, along with the heavenly powers. Bavrashit 1:16. This is an absolute diamond in terms of the brilliance of the insights that are conveyed here and how relevant they are to your survival at this time. The world is closing in on us. It's becoming exceedingly dark. Death is at our doorstep. It's going to haunt everyone, but beginning especially with Jews. We're just now less than 2 years from the very commencement of the time of Israel's troubles, and it's going to get so much worse. And this then is the means to escape. So God is saying, for this specific purpose, that he engaged and endeavored to serve by assigning and deploying both of these substantial and empowering sources of illumination, the Ha Maor Ha Godal. There are very few things that you would want God to say of you that are better than Godal. What Godal means is that you're capable, that God views you as capable, that you're courageous, bold. You're willing to work for him no matter the circumstances, that you have no fear when it comes to engaging on his behalf, that you're enlightened with his knowledge. You're capable of sharing what you have learned in a way that helps others understand the truth. By far and away, Dod is the most gadol of Yahweh. He says it in the famous prophecy in Yeshaya, Isaiah 9:6. It is Dod who is the capable and competent, courageous man of God. And to be a gadol, you're also combative. You're the kind of person who is going to excoriate the kind of religious lies and political myths that keep people from knowing Yahweh and that choose to either sequester their ability to learn about him or their freedoms, because religion and politics were conceived to control men and women. So both of these individuals, God is saying, are substantial and empowering sources of illumination. They are gadol, with Dod, of course, being the ultimate example of what it means to be gadol. Then he goes on to say that the most gadol, the gadol of the gadol, the most capable luminary of all, is exactly as I explained. He is the one who became prominent through his governance and his proverbs. It is memshala, to govern and empower, to affect and inspire. It is from mashal. Well, the mashal are the proverbs. There's this myth that Solomon wrote them, but that's nonsense. Solomon got very little right. Solomon started off in the first 2 or 3 years, maybe even 7 years of his reign, as being inspired by Yahweh, being wise. The things that he said and did were appropriate. Then he got all tangled up and, well, I was going to say in his underwear, but it probably was a lack of underwear that got him into trouble. He kept on having, I don't know if you want to call them marriages or affairs, with women who were engaged in promoting pagan religions. And he tried to accommodate them. And so by the time that his reign was over, Israel was on the precipice of being destroyed. So what is should be known, and I have done this in the books titled Observations, where I go in through the Proverbs and translate, I think, the first 7 of them, maybe even more, is that they were written by Dod. And it's obvious because they tell the story of father, mother, and son. Father is Yahweh. Mother is the Ruach Kodesh, the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's nature. And the son, God's son, the one person he says, he is my son, I am his father, is Dod. They were written by Dod. And so when it speaks of this greater luminary becoming prominent and clearly known through his governance and through his proverbs, his mashal, we are identifying, Yahweh is identifying the greater luminary with a man whose prose was so poetic, whose written word was enlightening and creating this graphic portrayal of the role that he would play and building Yisrael into God's family. So he is the leader who helped us understand. He is the exemplar of what is being represented throughout not only the Mikre, but the exemplar of Yisrael and the exemplar of Moed Mikre. And his rule, if you will, his time of sharing with us was during the daylight hours. When he was king of a united Yisrael, it was the brightest time for God's people. And in the middle of the day is also in the middle of the time, this 6,000 years from the time we were expelled from the garden to the time that we get to return, guess whose life is right in the middle of it? Dotes. The most magnificent of all of the Mizmor Psalms is the 89th. And in the 89th Psalm, Yahweh specifically says that Dod, as his Messiah, as the Son of God, is going to return as brilliant as the sun. And so this Mizmor was actually written at the same time the cornerstone of the house for Yahweh's name, often called the temple, was laid. And it's the 89th Mizmor that serves as the commencement speech, if you will, for laying the cornerstone of the home for Yahweh's name. And that occurred in exactly 968 BCE, exactly 1,000 years after Abraham and Yitzhak performed the dress rehearsal on Mount Moriah for the fulfillment of Pesach. 1,000 years before, Dod himself on Mount Moriah would fulfill Pesach. When God says, I've got this timing thing down, and these guys are going to live out that timeline and explain that timeline to you, he knew what he was talking about. Then he says that the lesser of the two luminaries, the more recent and the more easily understood, I certainly hope that's so. I'm certainly trying to make that so. The Eth Ha Katan, the one with that is less known and less significant overall, but the more readily comprehensible, the younger chronologically from Kut, the one who is opposed, that luminary, Maor, light, will become known and prominent as an influence over, to empower, to infect, to control. This is Mashal, to serve as a proverb, as a means to compare and understand with words and portraits that are beautifully presented to convey Yahweh's nature, Dod's role and Yahweh's plans and the entire expanse of what Yahweh is sharing with us. That luminary will be prominent during the night, during the darkest hours, which is what we're enduring now. The prophet Yoel tells us that what the world, in particular Jews, are going to experience starting on May 22nd and 2026. The preamble of this is already running rampant in the world, but it's going to ignite this seven-year time of Jacob's troubles at that moment. And he says what the world is going to endure and what particularly Jews will endure is more horrific than anything in human history, worse than the Holocaust. It's going to get exceedingly dark. And my role is to be a light in the midst of that darkness. And this is something Yahweh spoke about 14 billion years ago, and then communicated it to Moshe 3,480 years ago so that we could read it today. And it says, it ends this, along with the heavenly powers. Well, why is that the case? Because I'm meaningless. This physical body, this individual person, apart from what Yahweh does with me, I am utterly and completely meaningless. It is by affording this role that I'm playing with the seven spirits of Yah, which is presented in Yeshaya 11. It is unheralded. Nothing has ever occurred like this in human history, where God says, this is so important to me that we get this right, that my people know the truth about me, that I'm reintroduced to my people by name, that my son, Dod, is finally presented for what he achieved on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, that it's acknowledged that he is the Messiah and the Son of God, that this is so important that people come to understand my timeline, that they understand what each of the seven Moed Mikre represent and how they lead us home, and when all of these events will transpire, that this is so important to having a successful homecoming on Yom Kippurim, October 2nd, 6:22 p.m. in Jerusalem in 2033 when Yahweh returns with Dod. That Yahweh decided that he was going to afford this individual, which he refers to as a choder, as a bashar, as kol, which is his voice, as a malak, a messenger, as an ed witness, and as a zeroah, one who cultivates the seeds of a productive harvest. That, in fact, one of his favorites is what Solomon referred to, and it's found elsewhere through the prophets, as a nakri, a nakar, which is an observant foreigner. That all of this was so important to the success of what Yahweh wanted to achieve that it was empowered and guided and emboldened with his seven ruach, heavenly powers, beyond anything Yahweh has ever applied. The Almighty caused them to be placed there for this purpose as his gift. Nathan eth him. Dod is the son who was given. When you read Yeshaya 9:6 and you wonder, who is the child who was born? Who is the son who was given? It's Dod. Dod is the ultimate gift to humankind. And Dod laid down his life, his physical body, and took on our guilt upon his soul and carried it into Sheol to deposit it there, never to be seen again, signing our adoption papers on Bukurim, firstborn children. He did this as the ultimate gift to humankind. This is the story that Yahweh wants to know. He wants us to appreciate this great gift. Now, there's a lesser luminary. There is another gift. What I'm sharing with you, the 35 books on the shelf at yadayah.com, these 35 books, all of which are free, are a gift to you so that you might know the truth, so that you might come home, so that you might come to appreciate who Yahweh is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return, that you might come to be part of his covenant family and capitalize on the seven Moed Mikre, attending them and benefiting from them as they were intended for us. And something we've learned fairly recently, as the man from Edom is the bloody ran mad of the earth, the Adama Parah, the red heifer, I'm going to willingly lay down my life to cleanse and prepare the mortal remnant of Yisrael on Teruah. This will be on a Shabbat of September 24th, 2033, in year 6000 Yah. So in a lesser sense, I am also a gift to God's people. So the Almighty placed these two luminaries there as his gift in the expanse of space-time of the heavens to provide light, illumination for those on earth and particularly those in the land. Bereshith 1:17. And therefore, they will govern through their revealing writings. They will lead through the parables and the stories that they paint in memorable ways that lead people home through their descriptive words. With the daylight and in the time of darkness, providing a contrast to appreciate the difference between the light, and to comprehend being separated from the darkness. God saw that indeed it was good. Bereshith in the beginning, Genesis 1:18. It should be obvious that God was addressing two men through whom he would enlighten and lead the world. After all, should Yahweh have intended to speak of creating the sun and the moon, don't you think he would have been sufficiently intelligent and articulate to have used bara create, shemeth sun, yirah moon in his narrative and then reverse the order of the second and third days so that the procession of things remained accurate? I mean, last time I checked, inanimate objects do not mashal. They don't compose proverbs. They don't write in an illustrious way. That they don't govern. They aren't adept at oath, reading or writing signs, and they do not contribute to or participate in the Moedim, these restoring witnesses to the appointed meeting times in the eternal testimony. And since the sun and the moon have been around for billions of years, it was senseless to speak of their existence being time constrained by using the perfect conjugation. And yet, by contrast, there are two men who have served as luminaries to enlighten humankind. The greater of the two was particularly brilliant during the fourth day, estranged from the garden, where his psalms, his first anointing as God, and his work to defend Yisrael, his acquiring of Jerusalem and the preparation of the Temple Mount for this home for Yahweh's name, and these marvelous songs that he wrote, and the mashal that help us understand the father-son relationship that Yahweh intends and how we can be part of his family by observing the Torah instructions. All of that began at the beginning of the fourth epoch, and it all concluded in the very last day of it. Brilliant. All in the fourth day, estranged from the garden. While the lesser of these two, albeit more easily understood according to Yahweh, and yes, I'm speaking to you in English as he wrote and spoke in Hebrew, but the reason for that is there are more Jews that speak English than Hebrew. And most Jews that speak Hebrew also speak English. And there are also Goyim who are going to benefit from this, who want to be part of Yisrael, who want to be grafted in, who want to be part of the covenant, and it is there for all of us so long as we listen to and act upon the instructions that Yahweh has provided. So all of this has been made available. And the first to reveal and to see what God's most brilliant son achieved by design was the lesser of the two luminaries. Dod governed a united Yisrael, enlightening them with his brilliant prose, and then the nation. And he did so that we could come to know Yahweh better, so that we would understand specifically what it was that God was offering. And it's his brilliant prose that brought us closer to his father, at a time when the nation was most illustrious, while Yada's reflective light would pierce the time of darkness when Yisrael is the most divided, as she is today, and devoid of light. Both men epitomize the primary definition of Mashal because they are known to have drawn pictures with words, writing in a memorable and highly descriptive manner, leading God's people home with their words. And Dod, as the former and returning king of Yisrael, is the most acclaimed leader. For those who are noticing that there are aspects of this that I'm actually reading as opposed to just sharing with you extemporaneously, this is all from an unpublished book called Coming Home, Volume 4, The Herald, Bashar Herald, that I'm writing in my spare time, expecting to complete in time for it to be published before the Shabuah harvest. And So this is sort of a sneak preview into my current project, as most of my time is devoted to sharing Yahweh's message on social media these days. So these two men in the role of luminaries serve the purpose of God. They work for him. They do as he has requested. They would not only explain the Mohadim with their words, they would embody them with their lives. Dodon Pesach, Matzen Bakurim, Kippurim, and on Sukkah, which is why he's the greater of the two luminaries, and Yada, myself on Shabuah, and then especially on Teruah. It is why the Almighty put these two luminaries in these places for this purpose, offering them as a loving gift of enlightenment, empowerment, and life. And from a more mundane perspective, Yahweh's seven annual Moed appointed meeting times for the restoring testimony, using the sun and the moon, we can identify when to celebrate them. There are annual events whose dates each year are established based upon the timing of the first and seventh new moons. The greater and lesser lights, therefore, enable us to meet with God on the appropriate days each year. With, for example, Pesach being the 14th day of the first month, Abib, which is a time when the first harvest of the year, barley, is ripe in the kernel but still growing and receptive. And matzah would be the 15th day of the first month, Bukurim being the 16th day of that month, and Shabuah being seven sevens thereafter, with Teruah being the first day of the seventh month, calibrated from the renewing of the moon, on the renewing of the moon's light on the first day of the month. So all of this is incorporated into the discussion of the fourth day, because the first of the three Moed Mikre were fulfilled at the conclusion of the fourth millennia of human history in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE, during the second of Dode's three lives. And the fourth Moed, Shabuah, will be fulfilled by the luminary reflecting Dode's brilliance. And it is, of course, the fourth of seven. It's the middle candle in Yahweh's menorah. This juxtaposition of redeeming events is further explained by that very menorah, this luminary of Yahweh, which is over my shoulder here as the new branding of the series of books that I have written. The three spring and three fall Moedim, restoring witnesses, flank a central light representing Shabuah, the promise of seven. So you've got Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim on one side. You have Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah on the other, with Shabuah in the middle, the promise of seven, because it is set apart from the others and fulfilled by the lesser light at the peak of darkness enshrouding Yisrael, and 7 years prior to the greater light's return. Beyond this realization, Yahweh wants us to understand that life and death are determined based upon light and darkness. God enlightens us during the day, and Ha-Satan, the adversary, beguiles at night in the absence of sufficient light. And it is not that there is no light at night, but that it is insufficient, making the ignorant more susceptible to being misled. And in this regard, the adversary, Ha-Satan in Hebrew, as a fallen Moloch, is actually a cherub, is still luminous, albeit in an abhorrent and detestable opposition to the light. Acquiescing to his authority and control leads mankind away from God through religion to the lightless enclosure known as Sheol, hell. But that is not the point that Yahweh was making, because both the greater and lesser luminaries, Dod and Yada, are sources of illumination, both enlightened and draws closer to God. Yahweh appointed both sources of light, each serving a specific purpose in support of one another. Therefore, as we leave the first chapter of Bereshith, and in a subsequent program, we'll venture into the second. there is another profound revelation awaiting our inspection. And in this regard, I would like to venture into the realm of speculation. Reading between the lines, I think we're still living in the sixth day of creation, and that there's more to this story that we are just beginning to appreciate. As we contemplate this thought, keeping in mind that our time began with the creation of animals and was followed by the creation of the most godlike being, a creature made unique by being conceived in God's image with the benefit of Yah's blessing, we turn to what is the 27th and 28th statement of what is still this first chapter of Bereshit. And it reads, "So God created Adam, the man, for association. In his image and pattern, in the image of God, the Almighty, he created him. Male and female, he brought them into existence to be together. Thereafter, God knelt down in love to lift them up, saying to them, be productive and grow, becoming increasingly great. Choose to be satisfied and prosper within the material realm and overcome it. And let him choose to demonstrate his influence with the fish of the sea, with the birds of the air, as well as with the wild animals, all within the entire realm, with every creature which moves about on the ground." Bereshit 1:27 and 28. And when we do a third session in the beginning, and we turn actually to what will be a second topic, which is in the garden, we will recommence with this passage. So between now and then, I wish you shalom. May Yahweh's peace and his presence be upon you. This has been an edition of the Yahweh blog, and I am your host, Craig Wynn.